The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we're working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. Well, good evening, Abigail.
Good evening.
Nice to be with you again.
It's so good to be here. And we have, again, we just feel like we have some of the best guests
we do
lately.
Have some
and
awesome
we're so
guests.
Grateful for their time and for everything that they're doing in various communities. We have Christine Truen with us tonight, and she is the founder of Minnesota Parent Alliance, who is working incredibly hard to encourage people and train people to run for school board in their local communities and really have an impact. So welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much for having me back. I love this show. It's great to be here.
Thank you. Well, Christine, I believe that Minnesota Parent Alliance started just 2 years ago. Is that right?
We did. I feel like your list of podcasts here is sort of a little archive.
I know. I was thinking
the same
thing.
Yeah.
I know, because I remember having you on right when it was getting started. I don't even think you had your website up yet the first time we had you on.
We didn't. We were just sort of just in our infancy. And so it's amazing. Time is going so quickly. I feel like that wasn't very long ago. And we've really, I'm happy to say, really achieved a lot in a short span of time here. And mm-hmm. So I think that really speaks to what a need there is for parents to come together and get organized and get involved. I think there's more of an appetite than ever for parents to feel like they can really affect some change, mm-hmm. not just sit on the sidelines. So I think that's been really one of the best outcomes.
Yeah, good. Well, and good leadership on your part. And I know that you guys get a lot of support from the Center of the American Experiment, which is also very helpful. And I believe that your reach is statewide. It's not just in the Twin Cities, correct?
That is correct. Yes, we are a statewide organization, and it really has been the benefit of our group that we can communicate with these communities that are in greater Minnesota and compare their experience and some of their challenges with what's going on in the city. And I think what has been really surprising to everyone, including myself, is that there's so many things that aren't dissimilar. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to talk to people who have tiny communities with, you know, maybe not even a stoplight, that are struggling with some of the same things that seem like, you know, maybe bigger city kind of issues, or, you know, things related to, you know, ideological creep or discipline issues. They're not all that dissimilar, even in our rural communities. And mm-hmm. so I think that really speaks too to the fact that there's sort of a bigger picture thing happening here.
Yes.
In public education. And
yes.
So that's been, it's been revealing.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, one of the things that you have become very good at, really, in these short couple of years, is helping people decide that they want to, or helping those who've decided they want to run for office, or even helping recruit people to run for school boards, and then train them and help them run their campaigns and what have you. And before we talk about this engagement guide that you just launched, maybe you could talk to us a little bit about some of the successes that you had in the last election season, particularly in the Anoka-Hennepin district. Maybe I think it's a good example for our listeners, because sometimes I think people think, oh, it's such a big problem, I can't do anything about it. Or even if I get on the school board, what difference is it going to make? And so this is, I think a really nice example of how you really can make a difference. Maybe share some detailed background on that.
Yeah, so really the journey with Anoka Hennepin, which is our state's largest school district. So, you know, it serves, I think, close to 40,000 kids, and it is a beast of of an entity to manage. They have a huge budget that is within their control, and so it is no small task to serve on that board. And they are a board of 6 members, which is not as common as a 7-member board, but we do have several boards throughout the state that have 6 members. And that really introduces sort of a different dynamic in the sense of when you have issues that you're going to disagree on, you know, is it possible that there's going to be what we call a split, you know, 3 people on one side, 3 on the other side of an issue, versus, you know, in a 7-member board, it's much more common then that you will have at least a 3-4 division in that way. So anyway, Anoka actually is a unique story because our organization kind of came into being in the 2022 year. In 2021, Anoka Hennepin had their school board races. They do theirs on the odd year. And so they had an election that year where one individual ran and won his election. And really, I think, executed one of the biggest school board campaigns that the state has ever seen. I mean, he really, really got into the community and raced and spent a bunch of money and was just really out there and determined to win his race. And he did. And unfortunately, no one else that really shared his perspectives on what some of Anoka Hennepin's priorities should be with respect to education won that race. And so he's alone. He was alone for the last couple years. And so this last cycle in the 2023 election year, there were 3 other candidates because they saw how Matt was serving, and they saw just even though he was one voice on the school board, kind of what common sense he was taking into a lot of the conversations that were being had. And so the community really decided, you know, we need more people like this person to serve on this board, because he's really raising some questions that we all have about what our priorities are and, you know, how we're spending our money and our time in this district. So they found 3 people that were amazing candidates to run in the 2023 year. Our organization has a voter guide, and so we endorsed those 3 as being achievement-focused candidates. They ran great races, and 2 out of those 3 won. And so those 2 winners from the 2023 year join the winner from the 2021 year for 3 kind of achievement-focused candidates on a 6-member board. What happens then is now there seems to be a real division between these 3 members that we're speaking about and the 3 that kind of represent more of like the status quo, kind of doing things the way that it has always been done in the district. And so though they will, I think, probably be continuing to butt heads on certain issues that they can't come to agreement on, I think the moral of the story in Anoka Hennepin is you can affect change. You can over time, if you're willing to hang in there as an active parent group, which they certainly had, and I cannot stress that enough, how important it is to have a parent advocacy group that's going to come alongside whatever candidates may decide to run and not just be engaged during that campaign cycle, but to be in it for the long haul, to month over month be focused on, you know, what's going on our school board agenda and having a couple eyes and ears in school board meetings to listen to hear what the district is talking about. And then to have community time where, you know, maybe once a month you have a meeting where you're bringing all the people in the community together to talk about what your priorities are for K-12 education. That sort of consistent effort is key, I think, to really transformational change in a district. So it's really been fun to see that it just started with one person. There was one gentleman who said, I am going to run. I don't care if anybody else runs alongside of me. I'm going to do this because I feel called to do this because I see what's happening is broken. And his courage and conviction at that time, you know, several years ago, has now led to subsequent people stepping forward saying, absolutely, like, this person's on the right page here and we want to join him. And so it's been just very, very fun to see that whole community come together and say it is really time to recenter our priorities on achievement. And, you know, we're seeing that play out now. They are in the middle of a budget approval process in that district. And that is really an opportunity now for anybody who wants to focus on achievement to feel that they have a little bit of leverage in that conversation now. They have a voice at the table. They have 3 voices at that table that can say, wait a minute, you know, we need to pump the brakes on some of the ways that we've been spending our time and money in this district and make sure that because we have this just insane achievement gap that does not seem to be getting any smaller, we want to close this gap and we want to direct all of our resources toward that effort. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously with, you know, some of the ideological things that are happening in K-12 education, there's been a mission creep, certainly, I think, toward things that are non-academic. And I think there's some real concerns that we've gotten off track from our original mission of, you know, delivering a quality education to every student. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's a little bit of a bumpy ride, I think, to communicate that and to say it's really time to refocus priorities. I think anytime you're in a budget conversation, certainly because that district in particular has about $20 to $25 million that they need to cut. They're in a deficit.
Oh, wow.
They have to find that money from somewhere. And so I think that, unfortunately, the nature of a budget cut conversation is like subtractive, right? Mm-hmm. You're taking something away. You're cutting something. But I think I want to argue for their sake that they are adding something to the district. They are adding some voices at the table that are talking about focusing on achievement. And I think if they do this right and they do it well and they have this sort of shared model of leadership now, actually, which is unique, they have one person that's sort of representative of, you know, I'll say like kind of our side, right? The people we endorse saying we want to focus on achievement. And then they have these, you know, kind of three more status quo members. They've kind of picked one from each camp to be co-chairs. And that leadership model really hasn't been done anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real opportunity to say, I think there's a lot of common ground here amongst, you know, these six board members and all of the people they represent to figure out, you know, a way forward. Mm-hmm. And so it's been really, I think, a challenge, but I think it's certainly a worthy endeavor to say there has to be some common ground and there has to be a shared priority and there has to be something that we can add. You know, it's almost like less is more. I think if you spend less time and less money on some of the things that are clearly not serving students, we can direct those funds to the things that we know work, right? Mm-hmm. Direct instruction from teachers. Like the last thing we want to do is cut teachers. And right. So I think if there are other things that we can take away first, I think that's a conversation worth having. Mm-hmm. So that is what they're endeavoring to do. And they have a deadline for this budget approval process of July 1st. And so certainly they feel that they're all of them feel that they're under pressure to come to an agreement and at least pass this budget and get through that process by that timeline, because the last thing anybody wants to do is shut down a district, right? I'll argue, I know one other entity that uses that as a threat in their negotiations, and we want to be better than that. So I do think that that is not anybody's goal, is to keep kids out of school for a minute. So I think that the priority here really is we are, you know, all incentivized, I think, to come up with some centrist solutions that are going to really focus in on achieving and make sure that these kids are getting what they need, because we can look at the achievement results, and regardless of how you feel about assessments or their accuracy, certainly they're imperfect, but they really are the best measure we have for accountability of whether we're doing our job right as teachers, as a district, as, you know, an entity that is supposed to help children achieve. And when we see those numbers go down, that's a huge red flag to anybody in district leadership that they've got to start making some changes, because they really can't afford that decline. And it's really been happening in a significant way over the last decade, as I'm sure you've talked about on your show a lot. So it's time to change the trajectory. And I think it's one of those things where if what you're doing isn't working, you have to try something different. We really can't expect to get a different result by doing some of the same things.
Yeah. And we have to help people in the district understand why that's so important, because frankly, in a lot of the districts across the state, the status quo doesn't even really value test scores. They don't even see that as a real measure, because their idea of education has shifted so far from what I think most Americans think of when they think of education, that for them, you know, how many kids can read and write doesn't really matter to them, unless we're talking about the gap. But then they want to solve that education gap between, or I should say achievement gap, by not implementing things that actually improve learning on the part of those kids who are struggling, but instead kind of masking what the real results are.
You know, it does make a lot of sense to have those conversations, especially when you're setting budget, priorities, because a lot of the revenue streams that come, like I'll use the Achievement and Integration Plan, for example, which is something we have in Minnesota, and it directs funds to districts for a wide variety of things that you can do with that money. And so I think that when they set up these goals of how you're going to spend the money, what are your goals, having, goals that are like, well, we're going to close the achievement gap by like 0.1%, every year or something. That's not enough. Like, we better set a more aggressive goal because there are millions of dollars that are being directed at these initiatives. So I think that it makes sense to get everyone clear on what is our vision? Like, what are we trying to do here? And I think that that, unfortunately, is something that if we really can't even agree on what the mission of public schools is or ought to be, we have a very significant problem to overcome because that is almost a non-starter. We can't build on that. We can't have a foundation for a conversation about priorities if we don't even agree what the outcome is that we're driving at.
Yeah,
so to your point, if your measure of success of a public school district is, some sort of more subjective measures of creating agents of social change or, bringing about sort of like a cultural shift, that's different than saying we want 90% of our kids or more to be proficient in reading by third grade.
Exactly.
So
and
I
sadly,
think having that quantitative versus qualitative descriptor of what we want for our schools is a really important thing to focus on.
So, Christine, you have an engagement guide that you just launched, and that's one of the toolkits that you can find on your website, I'm assuming, which is it Minnesota Parents Alliance? .org or what is your website?
It's just Minnesota Parents. Simply Minnesota Parents, all spelled out .org.
Okay.
And we have a resources tab. So yes, if you go under that resources tab, you will find an engagement guide, which is like a very simple just starting point for people. And we're going to actually be taking a second cut at that over the summer because we've realized that people have started with that, and it's a great starting point. It's about having conversations with your teacher, your kid's teacher, building relationships. You know, I think that a lot of times parents wait until something like bad happens or something before they develop a relationship with their kid's teacher, and that's not really the best time to form a relationship is when you're really in the heat of something that's upsetting to you. So it's really just about, kind of as you start your school year, things to be mindful of, different ways that you can, more successfully engage. And so that's kind of the first step. And then I think that as parents have been doing that, though, and unfortunately, they find that, when you hit an obstacle, when you hit a roadblock, and it may be, a teacher that you're not going to see eye to eye with, or it might be somebody who's, really ideologically dissimilar to yourself that is teaching your kid, then there needs to be some other action that parents can take to make sure that they feel like they still have a sphere of control over what their child is being exposed to and instructed on. And so, then you start talking about things like opt-out forms. We've seen in the news, and I'm sure you've probably covered on your show even, that there have been a lot of families in the community that have realized that, flexing their opt-out muscle is an important tool to have in your toolbox because in Minnesota, any parent for any reason can opt out of any content that is objectionable. And so we've seen families opt their children out of content that relates to like gender and sexuality discussion. There was recently, quite a stir in the Osseo district because there was a very specific lesson that was going to be aimed at talking about LGBTQIA plus history and culture. And there were a lot of families that were uncomfortable with that and did not see the value of that lesson. And for a variety of reasons, didn't want their kids in that class for that day. And so a lot of them exercised their opt-out option. And it creates, unfortunately, for everybody in that situation, a really challenging environment because all of a sudden you have kids who are saying, I don't want this, or I have families who don't want this. You have teachers who maybe don't want to teach it, but then you have a lot of students who feel like this is deeply personal to them and they want to be in that class. They want their classmates to be in that class. You have a ton of kids that all of a sudden need to be pulled out and you don't know where to put them. So even just logistically of like, where do all these kids go for this duration of the class? It's chaotic. And it was a real no-win situation in that particular incident, in my opinion, because I don't think anybody felt better after that day. I think that a lot of these programs are aimed at sort of this feel-good thing of being inclusive and welcoming and trying to make kids feel safe at school. And I think the outcome often is it's more division, it's more distraction, it's more chaos. Nobody is the better for it. And so I think we have to be really careful about, when sorts of policies and initiatives and things around controversial topics are being kind of foisted on a district that isn't all in line and in favor of it. The outcome sometimes is pretty messy, and I think we need to be cautious about that. I don't think it does anything for our students' mental health to be in that sort of an environment where it's just like there's a clear display of division in front of their eyes and ears, and I don't know that that does anything to bring the student community together or to have more harmony in our district.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking this is going to only get worse as we implement our social studies standards and our new teacher licensure standards and what have you. But it's so good to have a source for parents who want to engage. And frankly, parents, they need to. Parents need to engage in this. And it's really important.
Well, and parents need to feel like they have something they can do, because I think it's really easy to feel helpless, like you don't know what to do. And, to your point earlier about I could run for school board, but what is that really going to do? And that's certainly not for everybody. And so it's what's left? If you're not going to run and win a school board race, how can you, make sure that you're still having your, parental involvement respected? And so anyway, the opt-out is a really great tool. There are other things that I think parents can do, including but not limited to curriculum review. I think that's really important, and I wish that our districts would have a more focused priority of making those review processes easier for parents to do. I think that right now it's incredibly challenging if you go to your district a lot of times and you say, I want all the curriculum that my kid is going to have for the year or in a particular class. Teachers are cobbling together a lot of different sources. It's not even like there's a clear curriculum that they're working off of. And so it's not, parents don't get a lot of confidence that they're even getting all of it when they kind of go through that process. And it's just, it seems like there's a real lack of transparency and clarity around all that. So, that's one thing though, that parents can put a little pressure on the district to say, it's really important for me to be able to review this and understand what it is that my kids are going to be learning. So the curriculum review thing is important. And it's also really important, I think, for parents to ferret out those opportunities to sit on committees or be part of, groups in the district. Statutorily, some districts are required to have certain committees. And I think that, depending on the district, your district may have several other committees that they have often a mix of parents and school board members and teachers and other people in the community. Those are great opportunities to just be in a space where there's a focused discussion happening about policy or curriculum or, a variety of different things in the district. I think that type of involvement, if you can, if you can carve out time for that, is a great first step. You meet people, you can build relationships. It just gives you a more clear picture of what's going on. So, our engagement guide touches on it. We have some other resources on our website that kind of talk about taking that first step. And I've mentioned parent advocacy groups. I cannot say enough. And I think it is so incredibly important for parents to get together who are like-minded and share priorities on, certainly from our perspective, I think re-centering on achievement really is at the heart of all of this. And so to try to bring a lot of stakeholders together on a regular basis to keep having that conversation and to keep advancing it, to cultivate quality candidates that are going to run for school board, to stack up people that are going to speak at a public meeting or write a letter to the editor or keep the pressure on for the district to stay centered in those priorities is really important. Yeah.
You mentioned something about a recent Education Minnesota press conference. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And then I also want to give you some time to talk about your school expo at the end of our show.
I'm not sure about the press conference. To my knowledge, they have not had one since last, it was probably July or August. They had had a press
conference.
That's
what I thought. And I remember that too. Yeah. And I have to say that was in our show notes from our show producer. And so I thought, that sounds like something that was from way back.
They did have one. And it was really in response to the fact that we have, as an organization, been, cultivating candidates and supporting candidates and creating a voter guide and really trying to create, I don't know what you want to say, an organization of parents that are stepping forward and we're challenging their what they believe is their school board election. Historically, the unions has totally dominated that space. And so they were a little bit caught off guard in 2022 when we first started. And then last year, they were really ready for us. They saw, what we're doing, how we're doing it. And were, you know, I think bold enough to have a presser at the Capitol to say, alert, alert, everybody, these parents are running for school board seats and, you know, we have to stop them.
Yeah. My goodness, you could not possibly have parents on a school board.
But, you know, I think that the words that were used in that press conference and just sort of the whole narrative that they have about, you know, whether it's just overt, like an offensive name calling, because these are white Christian nationalists that are taking our extremists, you know, I mean, all the book banners, like all the buzzwords that they use to really characterize what I believe are pretty moderate parents, actually, that are running because they're like, all of this is a bridge way too far for us. And this is not what we expect for our kids and their school environment to be. And so, you know, I actually think that it didn't serve them well, in my opinion, to have something that was just so, I think, just out there in
anti-parent.
Terms of the way that they're characterizing this.
Yes. Well, and very anti-parent. And anti-parent
very
involvement,
anti-parent.
Which really reveals their true colors. So, you know, like you say, I
and,
think
you know,
it probably did back
there. There's so much going on, and I feel like I try to put my ears in a lot of board meetings, and there's a lot going on in Rochester. It's another area to really pay attention to. And recently they had a whistleblower that came forward saying that this is a school counselor, and he was, you know, concerned that there's now a policy in Rochester that effectively keeps information from parents. And so they'll say, well, if a parent asks, you know, if your child is, you know, identifying as a gender other than their biological sex, then we have to tell them. But if they don't ask, we don't have to tell them.
Oh, my goodness.
So her point was, well, how would a parent know to ask if, you know, they don't know what they don't know, right? So she made this point. She brought this up in a public meeting, and she's, you know, gotten like the letter from the district that's kind of the threat to, you know, it's disciplinary action and you know, threats of termination if she speaks, you know, and in a way that is unfavorable to the district. And so, I mean, it's just really, it's pretty absurd at this point, because I think that in all the conversation now that's been had in Rochester, and like they had their local union president get up and give a public comment this week, and he gave this, you know, long comment about, you know, how they feel like they are there for the students and they need to serve the students. And there was not one mention of parents in that entire conversation. It was really the union saying that this is like an A and B conversation, parents. So see your way out. This is between, you know, the union or the teachers that they represent and students, and parents have no business in this. And that is really, you know, not
that's
explicitly what was said, but implicitly that's exactly
view.
What they're saying.
That
and that I think is offensive and concerning to most parents. Yeah. And that's
these are minors. These are minor
political.
Kids. They can't even vote. So, you know what, we've got just a little over a minute here. Can you just quickly talk about the expo and where it is, when it is, and all of that?
Absolutely. I'll touch on two events that we have coming up. The first one is I want to touch on our candidate training. We do a great job of hosting a campaign school. Our last one of the year is May 11th. So if you haven't figured out who's running in your district this year, and most districts, there are 331 in the state, and about 300 of them have school board races. So there's a good chance that your district is one of them. Find candidates to run, send them to our school. It's the best resource that we have, and it's the way that I think we've been the most effective in the last 2 years. So that's May 11th. It will be in Edina. People can register through our website. And then the next event that we have is May 4th. It's an Education Freedom Showcase. We're bringing in over 30 different exhibitors to, these are people that run, you know, micro schools, hybrid options, non-public alternatives. There's a couple charter schools. It'll be just really the gamut of all the different ways that you can have your kids educated outside what would be a traditional K-12 environment. Mm-hmm. So obviously, for all the things that we've just discussed, there's a lot of urgency for some parents where what's happening in their district isn't working. They need to get their kids to a better option ASAP. And so we want to make sure that they can see this array of options, connect with those founders, and even if they don't find a program that works for their family, they may connect with a founder who has a great model that they want to replicate and they want to start. And so our speakers are actually talking about education entrepreneurship and how there are a lot of people who are now starting kind of their own micro school or their own little environment and incubating some really innovative options. So we're really excited for that event, and that's May 4th
at the Shoreview Community Center, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Christine Truin. Have a great night.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.